Well, as it turns out, Kevin Barker, a memorable Memorial Day for the Toronto Blue Jays. I know that's pretty flat and pretty lame, but...
Was lame.
Really was. 5-1. Mr. Barker's Blue Jays have beaten the Chicago White Sox in the first of a three-game series. The Jays are now 4-4 in this run of games against beatable teams. The White Sox, the Tigers, the White Sox, and you're looking at me like that. And the Pirates, you were the one that was saying they were going to go 11-2 in this series.
No, I said they needed
this
to.
Run.
And say they were going to.
Yeah, they're 4-4
needed
right now.
To.
Hey, George Springer. George Springer.
Welcome to the season.
George Springer
That's
hit
rude.
His,
I'm sorry.
George Springer hit his first home run of the year off a fastball today.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, coming into this game, he was hitting 200 against the heater, which included three doubles. So George Springer gets the early home run, stakes Chris Bassett to an early lead, and we'll await to hear from John Schneider what the status of Chris Bassett was. I'm no doctor, nor do I play one, but it looked to me like, based on the way Chris Bassett was fussing around on the mound,
Something was up.
Yeah, he may have had some tummy issues or...
Sure looked that way.
Something like that. Yeah. So we'll find out. But I mean, nonetheless, kudos to Chris Bassett for keeping it together and maybe keeping it in. Who knows? for as many innings as he did. And, you know, I was going to say, I mean, any win's a much needed win for the Blue Jays. But you saw three home runs after that lost weekend in Detroit. You know, kind of finished with the 14-11 loss to the Tigers. This was important. Let's go to John Schneider, the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, right away.
They were swinging the bat real well. You know, three home runs today. You know, big offensive output yesterday, albeit in a losing cause. Guys are, you know, through tough times, guys tend to get a little bit closer. Good teams do at least, and I think they're doing that. And, you know, hopefully we need to get on a roll. But I think the things that are going to be important are power production, consistent good at-bats, and playing good defense.
Is something going on with Chris physically? I know he kept kind of stretching his neck. That was the reason for having him come.
Yeah, we weren't sure if he was going to start today, to be honest with you. His neck has been, it's like neck spasms and kind of then some. Kind of woke up feeling worse today than he had the last couple days. So he really left it out there. I think pitching out of the gym in the first, we kind of had Cabby on standby to start the game while Chris was warming up. So to get through five innings and some significant discomfort, I think just speaks to who Chris is.
Is that just something he needs to manage normally these next few days?
Yeah, I think so, hopefully. It's been the last couple days, and, you know, felt good about it yesterday and woke up today feeling a little bit worse as it goes, it seems. But really, really credit to him for grinding through it.
When you go to the end of that game with Davis, the insurance runs that you've talked about, can you walk us through what you saw in that at-bat and how he eventually got to his pitch there?
Yeah, fouled off some tough pitches that were kind of up, and his at-bats are just pretty consistent. You know, I think even the strikeout, probably a little bit off the plate, but he's going to do kind of what he's good at, and it doesn't really matter the situation. So I think fouling off the tough pitches, laying off a couple ones, and then getting his good swing off, which is huge. It keeps Jimmy out of the game and kind of gives us a little bit of a breather.
John, with Chris and that neck thing, I guess how delicate was that situation? If you're saying he was going, what was it that you needed to hear from him that said, okay, we can trust him, you're not going to make this worse?
Hearing it from the trainers first and foremost that it's not going to get worse, and then hearing Chris, you know, I trust him, you know, 100% with what he's telling me. So I think just kind of checking on him every inning and, you know, him saying, I'm going to give you what I got, and, you know, told us after the fourth probably it was one more. So I think that it's just, you know, you trust Chris Bassett because of, you know, the professional he is, and he's been really, really honest with us.
And so that's why you had Nate going in the fifth there behind him, because it was...
Yeah, that was his last inning anyway, and I think when you get to that point, just have someone up if you need him.
Does that make what he did out there that much more impressive considering
he
was battling with
them? Yeah, I do. I mean, I think pitching out of the bases loaded jam in the first, and especially after yesterday's game sucked, and I think it was, you know, tough to come in here with some energy and on a day game and things like that, kind of a weird vibe here early, but I think him doing that kind of picked everyone up a little bit and the bats came around, and I love the fact that the guys stayed with it after yesterday. So starts on the mound every day, but what Chris did was really, really big for us. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, John.
Yep.
Well, there you go. That was John Schneider, manager of the Blue Jays. And it turns out, if you think back to his last start, to Chris Bassett's last start, Kevin, and we welcome our friends now on Sportsnet Television Network, as well as those of you on Sportsnet 590, the Fan, and the Sportsnet Radio Network. It is Blue Jays Talk with Blair and Barker. If you think back to the last telecast, there was a shot in the dugout of, or it might have even been the start before that, of Chris Bassett applying some sort of liniment or something to the top of his neck.
Yep.
And then our friend Caleb Joseph noticed today when we were watching the game together that he also had a mark, you know, those cup marks on his neck as well. So that would explain why Chris Bassett was pitching with a great deal of discomfort.
Yeah. That explains the velocity, too. We were talking about the velocity when we were watching and wondering where that was at.
I mean, we had a hard time identifying some of his pitches because it was so all
over the place. Cutters, sinkers, those kind of things. Yeah, extension. I would think that was the, you know, if you're going to have any issues, it's probably getting it out front, snapping it off, having it go where you want it to go. Right. He's still tough, right? He's changing speeds. He's living on the edges. I mean, the sinker and the two-seamer and the cutter, like he can morph those things into whatever he wants to morph them into. He elevated those two pitches with occasion, which is a big pitch, right, to some lefties, and you're doing that up and into righties. So, yeah, I mean, you muscle through it. Give Nate Pearson credit. He came in. Glove side was great. Like, that's the first time, right, where, you know, he was a tougher take. When he's a tough take because of how hard he throws, he's a big league pitcher. When he's not, he's a minor league pitcher. Like, I think it's as cut and dry with him as when you're watching, you can sort of tell, right? And so happens today he came in and got those six big outs, which helped, and, you know, they kept Jimmy Garcia out of the game, which is huge.
416-413-3959. That is the back leg line. Leave a voice note for us. Name and location, please. You can reach us. 590-590 is the text line. 5-1. It is a winning edition of Blue Jays Talk with Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590. The Fan and Sportsnet. Three home runs today, as we mentioned. George Springer, Bo Bichette, who along with, I mean, we've seen more out of Bo and Vladdy in the past five or six games than certainly Bo. Vladdy's been pretty decent for a while now. Mm-hmm. And Davis Schneider, I mean, what more can you say about him? A two-run home run that, as John Schneider says, that keeps Jimmy Garcia out of the game. We were wondering perhaps why Jordan Romano wouldn't be available today. I know he'd pitched them back-to-back days, but 13 pitches each game. I understand he gave up the home run yesterday. But poor old Jimmy Garcia, what did he throw, 28 pitches a day?
Well, remember, too, Jimmy had he had 5 days between outings. So that's huge, too.
Right.
So, yeah, right, you're going to go to whoever you got to go to win a baseball game.
Let's hear from Chris Bassett.
A lot closer than one day, I'll say that. I didn't. Warm-up pitches, I wasn't sure if I could do it. Honestly thought I might face Tommy's family and have to be pulled. And it just kind of worked out where I was kind of able to figure out kind of where I needed to go mechanically, just throwing off strikes, I'd say. Besides that, I just didn't think I was going to go 5 innings, I'll tell you that.
What kind of gave you confidence that you might be able to just kind of
bend this
more?
Able to make some mechanical adjustments just to throw strikes. Wasn't like that in the bullpen to start the game. I just figured out how to throw strikes and go from there.
Is this something
that you've dealt with in the past? No, I've never once, I don't think in my life, like obviously slight stiff neck, stuff like that. Everyone kind of does that, but nothing like this. Never had neck or back pains or anything like that.
Did you just wake up?
Yeah, I woke up and can't really move my head to the left. Last start, had the same thing on the right side. But the right side doesn't really affect me pitching-wise. I don't need to look towards second base. I need to look towards home. So, it's just we'll figure it out.
Chris, those adjustments you had to make, were those of like body positioning to get yourself looking, or how did you get around that?
Yeah, I felt like I was obviously throwing completely open. Awkward to get my weight back, awkward to land because I was more open than normal. I couldn't look towards home plate with my normal mechanics. So, I give Jano a ton of credit because we had to change basically everything up from where to throw pitches, from where to set up pitches. we have figured out really fast. So I give Jano a lot of credit.
With the context of this game, like coming into that Detroit series, how tough that was that more motivation for you to do anything to get into this game, or was that a factor at all?
It wasn't so much like the wins and losses. It was more so, I think, the amount of relievers we've had to throw. I knew they're a little banged up, they're tired, and finally went out there and only threw a batter inning, whatever it may be. We're in some pretty bad shape, I'd say, going forward. So I just told Pete, and I told, obviously, Schneid's new. Everyone kind of knew. I said, I'll be smart. Like, if anything gets worse, I'll stop. And lucky for me, I'd say, nothing got worse.
Chris, oftentimes, you know, pitchers are worried about sort of altering their mechanics. Like, if you try to compensate for one thing, you could do something else. I mean, how, as you were kind of feeling your way through, kind of make sure that you weren't going to do anything that's going to get you too out of whack and put you at real risk for something else?
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the biggest thing I would say over all this is changing mechanics. Probably a really bad idea. But I just told myself to basically throttle down. Don't try to overthrow, and just, I would say, just like, just be comfortable in as much as I possibly can, just be comfortable. So I'm sure Twitter's gonna say all my velos were down and stuff like that. Yeah, overall, I would just say, just don't overthrow. Just pitch. Just throw enough strikes and just pitch. Luckily, I'm a pitcher, not a thrower, so I can kind of manipulate things and make it work. But yeah, it was just be smart. Just be smart. And obviously, we had a lot of conversations in between innings and stuff like that, just to make sure we're not doing anything stupid.
For pitchers, obviously, you need to see home plate for your sight lines and stuff like that. What are the primary challenges of sort of not having that direct view for yourself in terms of doing what you need to do, like, aside from the obvious?
Yeah, I mean, I just created the window where I could see home plate just by being completely open. It obviously felt really awkward. Kind of felt like I was throwing like Gausman a little bit in the aspect of how open I was. But I just had to stay open. That was the problem. Was I felt like I was never able to like truly drive the ball. But yeah, just I'll be honest with you, I got lucky. a lot of pitches, I just got lucky, and I think the awkwardness of it all kind of threw him off a little bit. How I was throwing, I know it was way different than what I did 5 days ago against them. So, yeah, just made it work.
For yourself, once you got through that first inning, so you pitch out of that base, you're much more in control from that point forward. What's it look like? Did it feel vastly different, inning one versus 2-5?
No. I wish I could say yes, it did. To me, it was more so just whatever happens, just try to throw as many strikes as I can. I was never trying to throw a ball. I was literally just trying to throw the ball down the middle, and hopefully stuff kind of worked out. Just trust the defense behind you and just throw as many strikes as I possibly can. I thought the real damage I could have, like, ran into is if I started walking guys or hit guys, stuff like that. So it was just stay away from hit batters. Obviously, I did hit somebody, but stay away from walks, and just if they're gonna score runs, that's fine. Just make them earn as much as I possibly can.
Thank you, Chris. Chris, feel better.
Well, there you go, Chris Bassett talking in detail about his outing this afternoon with the neck issue. And if you're watching that on TV, we've all had neck spasms. You could tell that Chris couldn't turn his neck. He looked like a guy that really was indeed suffering out there. Could have been a hotel pillow. Who knows? Some guys bring their own pillows in the room.
Yeah, it's 35 too. You got to remember that, right? Any way you walk, you land awkward, any of those kind of things. That would explain why he pitched more out of the stretch than he did the windup.
Yes.
Like, he tried the windup a couple of times, and he was talking there about starting open and landing open. I would think that would be a little tougher to do timing-wise when you're out of the windup. Other than the stretch, sometimes you just got to do what you got to do, right? Danny's set up, and I'm going to try and throw it there, and hopefully, a bad lineup's going to get themselves out, and that's exactly what happened.
416-413-3959 is the back leg line. 590-590 is the text line. Max in Toronto reached out to us via the text line. Springer finally got the pull power he was talking about. Yeah, finally being the operative word. Do you think he simplified it down to see the ball and not overcomplicate it? Kevin, no. I'll turn it to you.
No, I don't think so. I'm not sure these guys are capable of doing that. I think he's gotten paid overthinking it. Why are you stopping now? Because you've been struggling? I think he got a bad pitch at 93 miles an hour.
And is that the blind squirrel finding a nut?
No, I don't think so. I don't think. It looked to me like he's a little bit more on time. Just looked like he was, you know, it looked like his swing mechanically was a little smoother. I'm not sure that had anything to do with not overthinking it. And, you know, and then he gets himself out on a early count breaking ball that he probably shouldn't have swung at. Like, sometimes it's just head scratching on what he looks for and why he's swinging at certain things. But again, this is why he's gotten paid. I mean, I just give you this all the time. Why does dudes not do it? Because they got here getting paid one way, and Springer's sort of been paid this way. This is the way it's going to look. I wouldn't overthink the simplifying it and see ball, hit ball kind of thing. I'm not sure these guys are capable of doing that anymore.
So the Jays win 5-1 after losing 14-11 yesterday. I was so happy not to do Blue Jays talk yesterday, by the way, after that 14-11.
You were?
Shout out to Sho Alley, who
great job.
In. He did. Yeah, I mean, 14-11 games are just, you know. Honestly, I was listening to that game at home, and I'm thinking, if I was doing the show today, I was going to say something really stupid. I was really, that was throwing stuff at the TV stupid.
Mm.
So I'm glad Sho did that game. Of course, we come in, and they win 5-1, and it's a snore fest.
You take credit for it. Yeah, okay.
It was relatively simple. Before I go back to the phone lines and back to the text line, we talked about the bullpen and the bullpen used today, Jordan Romano not being used. Now, we are led to believe that at some point, Chad Green and Bowden Francis will be back with the team. I don't know about you. I thought at least one of them would be back in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Given the way John Schneider has used his bullpen now and given what we've seen, who are the odd men out when – because I've got to think Francis and Green are here pretty soon. There may be a day or two difference between when they get here. But if they come back, obviously two guys have to go. How do you see it shaping up right now? Because, I mean, I don't know about you. Nate Pearson still intrigues me. Zach Pop?
I mean, some would say you'd rather have Zach Pop right now than you would Pearson.
Right. And to me, the two guys who I would most likely look to move, or both of the lefties move, when I say move, option. I don't know if Mays has options left. I don't know if he does or not, but I don't think they're going to do that with Tim Mays anyhow. I think they're probably married to Tim Mays in this bullpen. So maybe Hennessy's Cabrera, like who moves to make room for these two guys?
Well, I would think the obvious choices are, if you're looking at your pen, you're looking at Romano, Garcia, Richard, Swanson, Green, Francis, and Mesa. And then the other three guys are, you know, sort of biding for the last spot. That'd be Pop, Pearson, and Cabrera. I mean, which one you like? Which one do you think could give you, you know, five batters or instead of two or three batters? Like, it's, you know, it's, again, you got to remember that three batter rule sort of throws a wrench into if a dude's struggling, is left-handed, who you more comfortable, you know, is it a right-handed hard thrower or a left-handed hard thrower has trouble getting righties out? Like, it's, I'm not sure it's that big a deal with the way as bad as the bullpen's been and as easy it is to pick obvious names that you have faith in. I mean, you send down who you send down. And then, you know, if it doesn't work out, you call them back up again. Like, I don't think you overthink it. And it's like,
if there is an organization that's going to overthink it, it's this one.
I'm sure all organizations sometimes overthink things when it comes to, you know, Mays has been around a long time. He's been a big deal for this bullpen. I mean, the guy would think, no, I think it's the three guys biting for the one spot. Yeah. And does it matter? Does it matter?
I mean, I will say this. We talked about this off the air. I still cannot believe that with this payroll, basically John Schneider's working with half a bullpen for the most part.
I mean,
he spent a lot of the month with half a bullpen.
Yeah, I don't see how that's surprising you. They haven't had a cleanup hitter in 2 years.
Because one thing they have done is they have moved early. They have addressed bullpen issues. That's one thing they have done. You know, I was telling you this before it came in the air. I'm looking at teams like Philadelphia. I mean, they're not I'm not saying they're going out and adding guys who are going to be their closers, but a lot of teams are making moves around the edges of their bullpen.
It's Turner.
And the Jays just seem to, you know, it's like rinse and repeat. And
Hard for the same bullpen to have excellent years back to back. Like it's really hard, right? It's just matchups. It's managers knowing, you know, what certain guys do, what you would not, that you might have thrown in there against in the year before. Like there's a lot of things go into why it's hard for guys to have back to back really good years. That's why GMs have turnover, right? You want to bring in other guys, give different looks. You know, it's just a different feel for that pen. And for whatever reason, they didn't do it.
416-413-3959 is the back leg line. Chris in Brampton called up to leave us a thought.
I don't know if it's the Jays' development, but they can't seem to develop outfielders properly. You look back in the late 90s, you had whether it be Shannon Stewart or Sean Green or whatever. You had some guys that can get on base, hit home runs, do whatever. But I was looking at the stats today, and you got Varsho, Kiermaier and Springer all under 300 for OPB, which is not good in one bit. So give me your thoughts on that. What's going on there, and why can't we develop outfielders? Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, none of those guys are developed. If you're talking about why can't they develop outfielders, I presume you're talking about why can't they develop outfielders at the minor league level, which is interesting. I mean, who have they developed recently? I mean, Kevin Pillar was a minor league guy. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. took him a while to figure out how to do it, but they developed him. But Dalton Varsho's not their guy. George Springer's not their guy. Kevin Kiermaier's not their guy. And I mean, in terms of development, you're not going to develop George Springer. George Springer's development finished 9 years ago. Dalton Varsho's development, that may still be a work in progress. Kevin Kiermaier's development finished 8 years ago. So there's two things here. If you're asking us, why don't the Blue Jays make outfielders better, I would argue that one, Dalton Varsho has become better since he's been here with the Blue Jays.
No doubt.
And two, the other guys are old and they are what they are, what they are, what they are.
Well said.
And internally, I'll throw it in a different way. Other than Bo and Vladdy, Alek Manoah, they've developed Alek Manoah. Davis Schneider, that's going to be found gold, it looks like.
Yep.
Danny Jansen, they developed Danny Jansen. The previous group did. But, I mean, the caller's right. If you're just in general, there has not been that production line of prospects. The production line out of the minors that we expected. I mean, I don't know how you see it, but I do. You know, I'm not saying that people are starting to reevaluate the Dalton Varsho trade, because the fact of the matter is the Jays gave up two everyday players for one everyday player, a good everyday player, mind you, having a better year than Lourdes Gurriel Jr. right now, probably. I think.
Yeah.
But
you could argue that.
But they gave up two everyday players for one everyday player. And you can't tell me that you wouldn't rather see this team with Gabriel Moreno behind the plate, Danny Jansen as your everyday DH/catcher, and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. in this lineup. You would. You'd rather have those two guys than Dalton Varsho. At least I would. But having said that, hey, Dalton Varsho, when they made that deal, I said, and people laughed, and I think I'm right. I said Dalton Varsho is going to be part of this core going forward. People kind of laugh. He is. I think he's part of this core going forward.
Again, we've said this before. I think it's the fact that you gave up middle of the order bats, and you brought in a guy who's trying to find his way, and you know, sort of because he's hit everywhere in the order, they really don't know what he is, right? They're just mixing him around because other guys are not stepping up, and he's starting to hit homers and driving in runs, and when he's doing that, you're going to take advantage of that. That's what it is. Developing, look, this organization's got a long way to go. Like this is the thing, right? If you know, you go on a losing streak here, it's not if they go, it's who goes first. Like that for me is the thing here. Like it's sooner than later, something's got to give. Like you just mentioned the John Schneider having to figure out the pen. Like the pen's been atrocious basically all year. Like, let's not lie about it. They're, you know, bottom end in about every major category that matters. Like, and then you add on top, they don't score any runs. Like, this is not a finished product here. And if you look at the minor leagues, I mean, it ain't like screaming, let's get this guy up.
I'll tell you what,
it's just not. So
I'm beginning to think either quietly they've punted on the year, or two, they got something big
How
happening.
Would you know quietly if they've done that? Like,
I don't know. That's what they're acting like right now.
Sort of.
They've either decided, they've got something big.
You've
coming.
Seen what that looks like before? Like, you've actually seen an organization do it and...
I've seen organizations.
What's it look like?
To me, it doesn't look like this. But I'm just saying, do you see a pulse?
That's fair. That's fair.
I mean, really.
There's been giant weaknesses.
The last time we heard from anybody with decision-making power in this team, the lineup's great, and they got enough talent. Okay. I mean, I don't think Ross Atkins, I think that's what he believes. I don't think he was lying, so fine. But 52 games in.
53. That was the 53rd.
Let's go to Jeff in Sackville, New Brunswick, before we take a break. Jeff, love Sackville, New Brunswick.
What's your thoughts on Davis Snyder? He seems like in the 7th and 8th and 9th inning, he turns on and turns into a much better player. And what's your thoughts on that? Thank you and love your show.
Thanks very much, Jeff. Kevin, I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, I think sometimes you make your own luck. I think him standing taller gives him an opportunity to fight tough pitches off. That's what it is, right? What's now that you're facing coming out of pens or late in games, to the caller's point, is power. How do I, if I get to two strikes, how do I foul that off to fight another pitch? Force him to, well, at least allow him to screw up and make a bad pitch, which is exactly
tonight.
What happened.
Oh, absolutely. 8-pitch walk.
Absolutely. But it's
8-pitch at bat leads to home run.
Trying to get him out glove side, right? That's a way to him.
Yeah.
If you would have done that to him, say, I don't know, 25 games ago because of the mechanics and how bent over he was, he's probably out. Now he's taller. At least he can throw the barrel at it to fight it off, foul it off, to live to fight another pitch. Again, this league is all about allowing that pitcher to screw up.
And
the better chance you got of letting him do that by, you know, just mechanically being sound enough to get the foot down, be taller, stay more direct to the ball, allows you to just manipulate the barrel as much as possible. And again, I just say he's earned the opportunity now to lead off.
Absolutely.
And play every single
day.
Every single
day. We talked about the Jays developing an outfielder, or lack of developing an outfielder. We can include Davis Snyder, I guess, in there in some. To some degree, although certainly you would, he tries hard defensively, but I think late in a game, you'd probably want to maybe
catch the routine play.
I was going to say, he'll make the routine play. And I'll say this for Davis Snyder. Regardless of how bad this team is offensively, he is playing every day and hitting leadoff in a major league team. One of 30 guys doing that job, which says a lot for him.
I just like the way he got to the big leagues.
Yes.
You know, trying to pull the ball in the air with the approach that he was doing it with. Kudos to him. He gets to the big leagues and khakis are going, man, this dude destroys the ball down. Now we got to start doing things at the upper quadrants of the strike zone. And that's how we're going to have to get him out. And he's like, okay, you're going to do that? I'm going to stand taller. I'm going to kick it to the ear. I'm going to get athletic when my foot hits the ground. And I'm going to be very aggressive with my barrel. Good for him. Like, he's adjusting every time they adjust. And sometimes that, you know, is not the easiest thing to do, Jeff. Like, it is, how dare you make me do something else? Like, I got here doing it one way, now you're forcing me to do it another way, and that sometimes takes a little longer than what it's taken him. So, good for him, man.
Like, I also...
He is a breath of fresh air. I got to be honest with you. Like, I stopped doing what I'm doing to watch him hit, and that's pretty cool.
And the thing I like about Davis Snyder, we talk about this a lot, he does seem... Granted, this can change, but right now you look at him and... He does seem to understand himself as a hitter. He understands what he has to do to have success. He is a guy that I think has a plan when he goes to the plate.
I'll say this, too. If it hits the fan, he's a part of the future for me.
Without question.
You always talk
without
about
question.
That.
Without
those,
question.
They need those cheap guys.
Oh, without question.
There you go.
Yeah.
Hungry, too.
He's everything I like. He's everything I'd like my organization to be about.
Earned it.
He really is. And he's earned a spot, and I'm with you. Maybe there are other teams looking at Davis Snyder, and they're viewing in the
same
way.
You can't give away everybody.
No, but you
didn't cost you any money.
You need for the next couple of years, this organization is going to be spending a lot in starting pitching. I think they've got the third highest starting pitching payroll in baseball behind the Dodgers and somebody else, maybe the Phillies. So you're going to need guys who are going to work cheap and hit and score runs for you. And that's Davis Schneider. And believe me, I'm not saying that to denigrate the guy. I'm saying that I'm giving him credit for that. 416-413-3959, the back leg line. 590-590 is the text line. We'll go back to the text line, back to the back leg line. 5-1, the Blue Jays have beaten the Chicago White Sox. This is Blue Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet.
You're up, buddy. Hey, beat.
All right, can we get security down here? Caleb Joseph joining us very briefly on Blue Jays Talk. 416-413-3959 is a back leg line. 590-590 is a text line. As we sift through the embers, whatever, of a 5-1 Blue Jays win over the Chicago White Sox. Game 2 of this series goes tomorrow night. We'll be back to our regular time slot with Blair and Barker tomorrow, which is Tuesday from 4 to 6 Eastern. And we've got a good show. Eric Kratz joins us. And we're also going to have Terry Francona along as well. So that'll be a lot of fun. Nice. George Springer's talking to the media. Let's get over there.
George, take us through that first inning at bat. Wasn't obviously a home run, but you got the pitch you wanted. And what did you want to do there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously the at-bat by Dalton was huge. You know, he gave me a chance. And I was looking for something to hit, not really trying to do too much. And you know, was able to get something and, you know, not miss it.
It's a home run to the pole slide on a fastball and kind of elevating a pitch that's in the zone kind of where you want to do that. Like, for you to do that mechanically, what's going right for you?
I mean, not trying to do too much. You know, I think, you know, it's obviously a long year and you want to, you know, stay within yourself. And again, you know, I just didn't try to do too much right there. You know, put a good swing on a pitch for the first time in a while. So I'm happy about it.
George, given where the team's at right now, coming off the Detroit series, which was tough, what are the signs that you look for that encourage you as a player, like that it's moving in the right direction now?
Well, I mean, all of it. You know, obviously, you know, we got down early in the game yesterday, and we're able to score 11 runs. You know, I think there's a lot of things that have been done that don't show up in box scores. And, you know, obviously we want the results to be better. We expect them to be better. And I know that, you know, the guys in there aren't going to quit. You know, obviously, again, it's a long year. But I just think that there's a lot of things that don't show up in box scores that have been done.
And before the game, Schneider talked to us a lot about the importance of dividing these days up, like one day at a time with this. Is that easier for you now than when you were like 24? Is that like a learned skill that you separate these days and start fresh?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, every day is different. Every game is different. Every at-bat is. And you know, obviously when things don't go your way, you know, both individually and, you know, as a team, it can seem to spiral. You know, things can seem just a big just jumbled mess, but I think guys have done a really good job of kind of getting to the next day, you know, trying to win the day, you know, not really looking forward to what's ahead or, you know, kind of dwelling on the past. I think guys have been, you know, especially the last month, I would say, you know, doing a lot better job of kind of just, you know, playing the day out.
George, can you describe, it seemed like yesterday was one of the harder games to sort of turn the page on. For obvious reasons. Can you describe sort of some of the emotions last night into today to kind of help wash that away and reset you guys for today?
I mean, the game, you know, it's over. It's over. You know, you can't do anything to get it back. You know, it's over. So I think for us, it was on to the next one. You know, obviously, yeah. You know, guys will want to win that game. You know, obviously with Jordan and you know, Jimmy Garcia, you feel really, really good. And you know, I love when those guys are on the mound. So it's okay. You know, this game can be weird. It can be cruel sometimes. But you know, at the end of the day, that's why I play 162. So you know, you have to move on. And you know, I'm glad that we did today.
For Chris to take the mound on a day where he might not have started with through his neck and the kind of effort you got from him, what do you guys playing behind the tape or not?
I mean, it means everything. You know, that's the stuff that doesn't show up in box scores. And, you know, that's, you know, he's incredible. You know, for him to go out there today, you know, give us five or six strong was huge. You know, he fought through it. I don't think it's really, you know, he was hiding much. You know, he did everything he could. And, you know, as a guy behind him, it's kind of all one of those things, you know, if he can do it, I can do it. And, you know, I'm going to do anything for him today.
He was saying that because he had to make good adjustments in mechanics so much that White might have wearied out some of the White Sox hitters a little bit. Have you ever, like, faced a guy where you see him one way all the time and he does something different? Is that change? Like, have you had that experience as a player impact you on you?
I mean, I haven't really thought about it, but I think, you know, I think he's kind of like the he would be the guy. You know, he does a lot of different things. He goes from the windup to the stretch and the same at bat, you know, and then back into the windup. It's and that's just kind of who he is. But, you know, I haven't really remembered it, but I'm not surprised.
There you go, George Springer with his first home run since April 24th in Kansas City.
That's been a while.
That's been a while.
Good for him.
His first home run this year off a fastball. His, what did we say? His 18th hit off a fast, something like that. Sitting 200 off the fastball this year.
He's had a down year offensively.
Yes.
Whether he's overthinking it, whether it's mechanical, you know, whether he's getting a little older, like it could be numerous things, but.
First time, by the way, he was hitting seventh today, the first time in his career, which is 1,207 games, including this one, the first time in his career that he's hit below sixth in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, some would say that's about a month late. I mean, let's be honest. Like, he's had a really, really bad start to the season when they could have used a really, really, really good start. But maybe this will be good things to come. It just seems like he's in a good headspace. You're looking at every little thing that you can look at to sort of get hot and stay hot for a long period of time to sort of take pressure off of just everybody, right? I mean, that's why they give him Gobb's money, is to sort of, you know, carry the load for a while so everybody else can play catch up. And hopefully, you know, this confidence here, it just seems like he sounded a little bit more confident today. And getting hits will do that. Hitting the ball hard, getting results will do that, right? I mean, you can only talk about hard hit percentage so much until results start having to matter. So hopefully this will bode well, and he'll go home and get a good night's sleep and come back tomorrow and get a bunch more hits.
416-413-3959. That is the back leg line. Your opportunity to leave us a voicemail, become part of the show. Kevin in Halifax took advantage of that. This is what he had to say.
Yeah, I got a question for you guys about lineup composition, but also Vogelbach being in the lineup. So a couple of games ago, we had Justin Turner in the two spot because he'd hit a couple of times in a couple of games before. And he was at bat when he had runners in scoring position three times in that game. And all three times, he was the last out. So you got kind of a head scratcher. And today, Daniel Vogelbach in the fifth spot, who's had eight hits in his time as a Blue Jay, kind of make me wonder, okay, well, you know, how much longer are we going to put Daniel Vogel back in and, you know, just because he's a left-hand batter? And maybe where is Joey Votto is my other question. Is like, you know, how much longer before we get him up here to get potentially a better bat than at least Vogel back anyway in the lineup, guys? I'd love to hear what you think.
Thanks. I mean, I don't know. Joey Votto. Is Joey Votto playing yet?
Yeah, I don't know. I'd rather have Horowitz or Martinez or Nathan Lucas. Like, I'd rather have one of them three than Joey Votto. Like, no offense to Joey Votto. I'm sure he'll be a Hall of Famer. But, I mean, how many more conversations can we have of let's wait for Joey Votto to come up and not be whoever else? I mean, Turner is, what, coming in today, four for his last 48.
Well, let's face it.
He ain't been real good.
No. And what is he's almost – it looks very much like we're in a platoon situation at DH right now with Vogelbach and Justin Turner. Which is not good. Justin Turner was brought in here to be the everyday DH. I'm with you. I do not understand why Daniel Vogelbach is on this team. I have no clue.
Well, to start the season, you can understand, right? They were trying to give different looks off the bench, right? Yeah, they need a lefty power hitter. Yeah, well, you know why. That's why.
He's not. Yeah, but I mean, he's a lefty power hitter who hasn't been a lefty power hitter. I mean,
in the offseason wasn't like they were oozing great moves.
No. But so, my point is, you've got Spencer Horowitz, who is not 21 years old. I'm not worried about Spencer Horowitz getting less playing time in the majors than he is in the minors. I don't care. All I know is Spencer Horowitz gets in base, and he can hit.
Yeah.
And he's hitting right now. bring him up. I mean,
let him DH.
Let him DH, exactly. Why not? It's not going to affect his development any more than bringing him up last year and just using him here and there affected his development. I don't know if somebody owes a favor to somebody's agent. I don't know why Daniel Vogelbach is on this team.
I just told you why.
Maybe 6 weeks ago, but there's no reason for him to be here.
You're awesome.
There's no reason for him to be
That's
here.
That's facts, but it's head scratching. Why the urgency when it comes to, you know, there is a guy in the Horowitz is a better hitter than what they have right now. Especially the left-handed hitters off the bench.
Well,
why is he not here? Like, that's the whole point, right? Is why would you not, you know, subtract a guy and add a guy who is better at it?
And he's your own guy.
He's
your own guy.
He's
your own guy. You know, bringing your own guy, David Schneider, worked out pretty well.
Good clubhouse guy. That's what, every guy that we ever talk about is, you know, the best clubhouse guys in the world. I want good hitters.
Well, you know what? Then get some jackasses in here. Seriously. I mean, if it's nice that everybody's nice.
Oh, they love Vogelbach.
Guys with a red ass in here that are going to get mad.
They frown on that.
They don't want those guys.
They'd rather
those guys.
Everybody acting the same, looking the same, and talking the same.
The idea of Daniel Vogelbach, I just don't know. As far as the batting order, we're led to believe the manager makes the batting order with input from the 30-odd people who are working for him.
Yep.
Not for him, but are working for the team.
Yep.
Who knows? Like everything else with this team, it's clouded in mystery.
I mean, you got a manager for a reason. I mean, if the manager's not going to make out the lineup, and I mean, he's going to the right guy in the sixth inning, why can't he make out the lineup? I mean, this lineup's not hard to make out. Who's your best four hitters?
And the reason...
And then you fill in the blanks everywhere else. Like
Justin Turner hitting it. Justin Turner hitting the second spot was a bit of a head scratcher for me. Not that he's in the game.
Oh, it's a huge head scratcher.
Not that he was in the
game.
Well, because you're going to give Danny Jansen some time off. You just are. I'm sorry. You're going to give Danny Jansen some time off. Kirk was in. You just have to. Danny Jansen's not catching every game for the rest of the year.
Yeah, Varsha wasn't playing either, which is a little head scratcher, right? The obvious guy against the righty who likes to throw the ball down. Why isn't he hitting second? Like, why give them both the day off at the same time when your team has trouble hitting?
That's a great
and you're trying to get off to a couple of good games here and gain some momentum against some bad teams. Why wouldn't you give them both two of your better hitters the day off the same time? Like, that makes total sense.
Let's go to a lovely, and I do mean lovely, part of the country. Let's go to Cape Breton, Nova Scotia. David in Cape Breton had a question, probably directed to Mr. Barker.
Mm.
Watching Bo this year, maybe splitting hairs here. He's a perennial 200-hit guy, but it seems like he's looking a lot more to right field and right center instead of kind of using the gaps from left center to right center. Does that make a difference in his approach? Do you guys think it makes a difference? And secondly, do you guys ever think of taking the show on the road? We'd love to have you down here and come for a few live shows.
Oh, I'll tell you what, East Coast, I would set up, David, thanks for the call. I set up a studio in the East Coast.
It'd be a lot of fun for sure.
Now, the only question I'd have is, because I'm partial, I like all the provinces. I have not been to Newfoundland, and I'm told if I go to Newfoundland, I'll never want to leave.
Well, we could hit them all.
But PEI,
yeah,
Nova Scotia.
Yeah.
New Brunswick.
Just say all of them instead of calling them, you know, two or three of them. Just say we'd love to go to all of them. Take the show on the road to all of them. Let's do that.
Yeah.
The Bo thing, I'm under the impression, having the conversations with Bo, he always thinks right center. I mean, it ain't so much left center as because of the bat path and you know, what he does with his lower half, which is open up the front side, land the way he lands. Sort of the barrel is, you know, where it's at the point of contact, and he's an inside-out guy. Inside-out guys don't think left center. They think right center and right field. I just think early in the season, when I've had conversations with him in spring training and listening to him talk, wanting party out front in certain counts, right? Swing counts, right? You get in 2-1 counts, you may be thinking left field instead of right center, right field, which is what you've done the last 3 or 4 years, and that's how you've been getting 200 hit plus. So, yeah, I think he's went through it. I mean, getting paid is not the easiest thing to do. And he thinks he is up there with the elite guys when it comes to being paid the most amount of money. And the way you do that is probably not, you know, hit a 17 hopper to right field. Occasionally you got to bridge somebody and backspin a ball, and you got to do that in certain counts. So, you know, I think he's in between it mentally. I think his, when you're in between it mentally, your mechanics start to try and play catch up, and then they get both get out of whack, and it looks the sort of the way it has looked. It don't look that way now. Now he's starting to be Bo again, and I think he'll go on a run and be the Bo we all want him to be.
Well, he can't talk about Bo. It seems as though talking about Vladdy, Leonardo in Ottawa reached out to us on the text line 590-590. Vladdy has been significantly improving over the last couple of weeks, but we still need to see more?
Absolutely.
Singles are better than strikeouts, but do we need more out of Vladdy to really ignite this team?
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, we need home runs and extra bases.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like the sixth inning at bat when he was late with a runner on third and less than two outs. He did the double plays late. Like, it's those at bats. I mean, it's all fine and dandy you getting lead off doubles. But you're a run producer. You're hitting the middle of the order for a reason. Like, you're supposed to be an aircraft carrier. Like, those at bats like that is how you make your money, is to get that thing down and get it singing. Like, those are the times you'd rather be early than late. I'd rather be catching me out front, backspinning that thing instead of always trying to hit that line drive, right? Letting that thing travel. Those are the opposite times of trying to do that. And those are the at-bats for me sometimes make you scratch your head. Like, he has great at-bats with nobody on base. And then when it's like those at-bats where you got to zone in and really catch that thing out front and really hone in on what you're trying to do because the situation is forcing you to do it. And in that sixth inning at bat, and it makes you want to pull your hair out. And if you're a fan of the Jays and you're a big fan of Vladdy, like I am, because that thing don't grow on trees, boy, that's special stuff. But it's those at bats right there that can frustrate you, and I can understand that. And those need to get better. Absolutely. That should be a double to right center or a sack fly to the warning track in center field. Not a ground ball because you're late. Sorry, that can't happen anymore.
Pete in Vancouver.
Just wondering what your thoughts are, regardless of the great win they had today. If the season keeps going the way they're going, what do you see happening first? Do you see them trading an integral part like Bo or Vladdy or Romano, or do you see Schneider or Atkins being fired? Thanks, guys.
I mean, who knows? That's the only answer I have. General managers generally don't get fired mid-season. I think the Chicago White Sox did that with they cleaned house with Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn in the middle of the season. Mm-hmm. Brought Chris Getz in. Of course, they're playing the White Sox right now. There was another situation, I think John Daniels in Texas maybe, but it generally it doesn't happen. That general managers get rinsed in the, I love that word, get rinsed in the middle of the season.
That worse than getting fired?
I don't know. As far as trades go, Bo or Vladdy, I don't know. I don't see them trading Bo or Vladdy. I don't know. I don't know what the people above Ross Atkins are seeing. I don't know what they're seeing. I don't know what Mark Shapiro's seeing.
Maybe there's a reason why they haven't made any moves. Yeah. Maybe they're trying to figure out what they want to do with their front office.
I don't know. I
don't think anybody knows.
No. And I think that's frankly probably by design.
Absolutely.
But I could throw out a fantasy trade for you, but, you know, we've talked about this. You've got guys, it doesn't seem like they want to trade prospects, and right now the only prospect anybody would probably want is Aroldis Martinez because their pitching prospects, at this point, you don't know what Ricky Tiedemann is because you just want him to stay healthy. So the only prospect they probably have that you could deal is Aroldis Martinez. I don't know if you want to do that. Beyond that, Danny Jansen's got less than a year left before he's a free agent.
Jimmy Garcia, Jordan Romano.
I mean, I don't know what either of those. I don't know what any of those. I don't think any of those get you anything that helps you in the immediate future.
No,
they might get somebody's
numbers.
Prospect
might get you numbers
that might be able. I don't even know if numbers in a couple of instances. I can't imagine you'd. Yeah, I don't think anybody's given you their top prospect for 4 months of Danny Jansen. So,
no.
if you want to trade somebody to get somebody, if we're talking about somebody who's going to come in and be an impactful player this year, next year, the year after that, you got to move one of Bo and Vladdy. or one of your starting pitchers, I would think. Other than that, you're not going to.
I wouldn't think so. For me, it has to start at the top. I mean, you got to figure out what you want to do with your GM first. Like, if you're going to start making these moves, do you really want Ross doing it? Like, I maybe that's ran its course. Maybe that's why they haven't done anything or talking as much as we'd like to hear them.
I mean,
talk.
They're on,
like, maybe that's
on,
why.
They're on their third different manager.
That's a lot of managers.
Now, granted, you know, John Gibbons was inherited.
Yeah,
but
he's still fired.
If they were to fire John Schneider, they would be on their fourth manager. The Yankees, I mean, look around this division. The Yankees, and this is supposedly the toughest division in baseball where all the pressure is. Yankees, Red Sox, Rays, Orioles, they've all kept their managers.
Yep.
And you know what? The last time I looked, they haven't all, I mean, it's not like, well, actually, they all have won the division. So there you go. There you go. There may be a tie-in. But at some point, you got to stop the revolving door at the manager's office and ask yourself, is that really where the problem is? I mean, I keep hearing about urgency. I don't see a sense of urgency. So I don't know what to make of it.
Oh, I'm with you 100%.
I don't know what to make of it.
Yeah.
Because
it sure does have that feel. You're seeing what you're getting.
Yeah, if there was a sense of urgency.
It sure feels that way.
If there was a sense of urgency, I don't think we would have spent the last 10 days waiting for Chad Green or Bowden Francis to come back. I think
injuries is a little different story, right? That's more about the player than the organization. But I'm with you. You would sure think that you might see one of those hitters at the minor league level who's doing something.
Yeah,
I mean, there's some guys at the big league level who aren't doing anything.
I mean, it can't be that hard. Can't be a service time issue.
No,
I'm gonna leave Aurelvis Martinez to the side.
Yeah, he doesn't have a position. I can understand that. He's got some growth.
Everything
I've
heard is he's
figuring it out.
Well, yeah, and you know, as bad as this team is, stick a guy at second base who can't make a routine play and look how bad things are going to be. So I kind of leave Aurelvis Martinez off to the side.
He'll be here soon enough.
But I mean, yeah, I would have no problem with Spencer Horwitz up here. I'd rather see him get at bats than Daniel Vogelbach. I'd rather see Addison Barger get at bats than Daniel Vogelbach. I just would. I mean, I'd rather see what Addison Barger is. Maybe he can't play at this level. Okay. I'd like to find that out now. But anyhow, there you go. They won today, 5-1.
Yeah.
I would love to do a show where you don't have to talk about somebody being fired, somebody being traded. I'd love to be able to go a week without writing a column about somebody being fired, somebody being traded.
Hmm.
But
so what happens when you're 5 games under 500?
Yeah, my sense is
you're in last place in the American League.
My sense is that
you're way back in the wild card hunt too.
Yeah, that blessed moment may not be here anytime soon. So there you go. The final score, 5-1, the Blue Jays over the Chicago White Sox. Game two of this 4-game series goes tomorrow. A reminder that Blair and Barker will be on from 4 to 6 Eastern tomorrow on the Sportsnet Radio Network and on Sportsnet. Terry Francona and Eric Kratz will be our special guests tomorrow. And please do join us. Thank you for listening to Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers. Speaking of the East Coast, in Grand Falls and Miramichi, New Brunswick. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com. They are Canada's number one rust protection.